You are listening to the RTE Brainstorm podcast, proudly supported by Research Ireland.
Hi, my name is Ella McSweeney and this is Brainstorm. If you want to know about new ideas from the world around you, then this is the podcast for you. 11,000 tonnes of wind turbine blades are due to be put on the scrap heap in Ireland by the end of this year. But the glass fibre materials used in making them are not biodegradable. And the industry has suggested the introduction of a landfill ban for them. So what are the alternatives? Joining me is Dr. Pat Leahy, a lecturer in wind energy at UCC, and Dr. Vesna Jaksik, a civil engineer at Munster Technological University in Cork. Paul, the wind keeps blowing, but the turbines themselves eventually will wear out and they need to be replaced or decommissioned. What currently happens to these blades?
So when a wind farm reaches its end of life, which is, you know, typically 20, 25, maybe even 30 years after installation, the rotor, which is the rotating part, which includes the blades, they're taken down off the tower. And then what's happened up to the recent past is that the blades have usually ended up in a landfill. So they get chopped up and then they get buried under the ground.
And if you did a kind of assessment then of the associated emissions or the kind of plastic pollution that creates, it's quite significant, I presume.
Problem with landfill is that one of the biggest problems is firstly that we're running out of landfill space, and it's a very inefficient use of space. Landfill is being disincentivized through regulations and through charges, and it's very clear that, you know, landfilling is not a sustainable option in any sense of the word sustainable, not environmentally, and it will probably be no longer economically sustainable in the near future either.
So you have these things, I saw online, I think it's Wyoming, what they call like a blade graveyard, where you have just the blades laid out, you know, acres and acres and acres of it. It's an extraordinary sight.
It's an amazing image, and it's actually, I recently contacted the photographer who took that image. I wanted to ask his permission to use it on a piece of information. And I was just going to send a kind of a normal, you know, request for permissions. And then I thought, no, you know, actually, I'm going to write him a little note and say, you know, this has really changed the perception of end of life of wind turbine blades. And in fact, I think we kind of owe him at least a thank you, because he helped to bring the issue to the fore. That image generated a huge amount of publicity. I suppose some of it was probably negative publicity for the wind energy industry, but I think it did bring people together and kind of focus people on the issue of dealing with these blades when they're decommissioned and when they're taken down off the turbines.
Are any of them incinerated as well?
Yes, incineration is, there are two types of incineration. So there's incineration without energy recovery, which is just burning, for, you know, want of a better word. And then there's you know, waste to energy facilities, which take in lots of different materials. They use the embodied energy in the material. So there are plastics in the wind turbine blades. You can recover that. You can, you know, turn it into electricity or useful energy or heat energy for a heating network. Slightly better than the conventional incineration. But yes, you know, those are options that are used. Very, you know, continental Europe, a lot of wastes are incinerated. It's quite a common option. But it's lower down, it's still near the bottom of what we call the waste hierarchy, which is a kind of a order preference of what we should do with end-of-life materials. And, you know, the best thing we can do with anything is to keep it in use, so we can prevent waste by keeping things in use. The worst usually is landfill. And then incineration is a little bit better than landfill usually, but it's still near the bottom of that waste hierarchy.
And so, Vesna, the towers of wind turbines are made of steel. So steel can be quite easily put back in and recycled and all the rest. But these blades, what exactly are they made of, and why has this become such an issue?
They're made of fiber glass mainly. It's combined actually the fiberglass textile. This is like a material that looks literally like a textile laid in the layers and infiltrated with some kind of resin, so they are stick together and that they have sufficient strength to resist wind, to take the load from the wind itself. In that sense, this material is a very hard to, it's not a biodegradable, and it's a very, very hard to actually recycle. So to detach these fibers and use them again in some other structure.
Paul, this composite fiberglass, so it's held together with this very, very strong resin and makes these blades lightweight and durable and all the other things. 30 years ago, when these turbines were built, did the manufacturers or the industry think much about what would we do when the blades died or needed to be replaced?
I think they probably didn't. Wind energy was still innovating pretty fast. It was a relatively new industry. It was kind of scaling up at that time to becoming a major player in the electricity generation sector. So all the focus really was on getting better structural performance out of the blades. So longer blades. Longer blades are the main driver of reducing costs and improving the amount of power generated in the wind energy business. And basically, the amount of power that you can get out of a wind turbine is grows with the square of the blade length. So, getting a longer blade is really, really important. So a lot of the drivers were just around getting more energy, getting the cost down, improving the structural performance, and thinking about what happened at the end of life was probably not at the top of anyone's priority back then in a kind of a very rapidly growing, new, exciting, innovative new industry.
And when you say longer blades, I mean, we're talking about like really, really long here, aren't we? I mean, now and looking into the future, how long are they going to get?
So it's been incredible, really, if you look at what's happened and the evolution of this technology over the past 30 years. Back in the early 90s, which was when the first grid-connected wind farm was installed in Ireland, we had blades that were of the order of, maybe 10 meters and then 15 meters long. Now the largest blades in the world, so some of the huge offshore wind turbines that are currently being installed in the North Sea and in China, some of these blades are 120 meters long, so they're 10 times longer than what we had back 30 years ago, and they're phenomenal machines. The scale is impossible to communicate in words, really, unless you've been up close next to one.
And looking to 2030, 2050, how many of these blades are going to be decommissioned in Ireland? How many are potentially going to be in a blade graveyard looking for a second life?
Well, this is one of the key motivators of our work. And, we did some previous work with collaborators in Belfast where we tried to kind of project forwards and look ahead in time and predict the future of, we know when the wind turbines were installed. We know that they typically operate for maybe 25 years. So we can, with a reasonable degree of confidence, we can predict what the flow of these end-of-life wind turbine blades is going to be out into the future. And what we found was our reference year was 2018 when we kind of started looking at this problem. And we said, okay, let's look 20 years out into the future to 2038. And it was over 2,000 turbines we predicted to be decommissioned by then. And of course, there are three blades on nearly every turbine. So you're talking, between 6,000 and 7,000 blades that are going to need to find some kind of a solution for their end of life in this time period.
And Vesna, is there not a second-hand market for these blades? I mean, I'm thinking about not only, like small community-owned renewable energy schemes who might be interested in buying second-hand turbines who can't afford to buy the new ones, or a global market at all?
There is. Now there is a question how much it can be actually absorbed. If we are talking about the local communities, they might have one or two or three turbines. So I think that the whole lot cannot be absorbed by that secondhand market. And looking at the blade waste, I don't think and I don't believe that there is only one pathway. So maybe repowering or selling to a second market would work to a certain extent. But we have to open a possibility to be maybe some of those blades repurposed, which is what Paul talked about, the lower on the hierarchy of the waste, but it's still acceptable solution until we reach the technologies that would be capable on dealing with the greater waste that is yet to come. So yes, in the sense of the decommissioned blades, we should look them as assets that can be installed in the local communities, like in the to be passed on some other wind farms. But we also have to look at some other options, because the amount that will come out in just a few years from now won't be able to be absorbed.
Paul, if the material can't be recycled, apart from the towers of steel, obviously, but the blades themselves, what are the options?
As Sebastian mentioned, you know, their main material is composite material. And composites have amazing structural properties. So that's, you know, a really important aspect of these blades. So even though they might have served 20, 25 years or 30 years on a turbine, and you know they've spun around millions of times, they've been, to some degree, they've been stressed in their operation. But such is the property of composites that you can still extract a lot of useful lifetime out of these in new applications. So when we think about a blade as a structural product, so perhaps, you know, and a blade is a structural product, it's an aerodynamic product, so it's designed to harvest wind energy out, you know, in moving air, but it's also a structural product. It supports its own weight when it's on the tower, and we can use that structural property to support weight in other applications through structural repurposing.
So what are you thinking about? Bridges, that kind of thing?
Yes. So bridges are one of the first things that we thought about way back when we started our project called ReWind, which we started about 6 years ago. And we're very proud that there is now a wind turbine blade bridge, which has two 14-meter long blades, which were taken down from a turbine in Northern Ireland and are now the main structural elements of a bridge on the Middleton Deol Greenway in County Cork.
So the characteristics of this composite material is they're very useful for big structures like that, because they're extremely strong and can weight bear, as you were saying. But how difficult is it to be stuck to the shape? You know, when you think about the blades, they are a very particular shape, aren't they? And they're sort of tapered at the end. How difficult is it to reimagine them for a completely different purpose?
You've hit on one of the key challenges in structural repurposing of turbine blades. Yes, as you know, they are curved. They're a fiendish shape, really, to work with. So, you know, structural engineers like working with, you know, rectangular beams, nice straight lines, 90 degree angles, things that are, you know, for the most part, you know, easy to work with. So the blades are, so they're tapered. So that's the first problem, that their cross-section changes along their length. Then they have a kind of a smooth external profile, and that's necessary for the aerodynamic function. If you go to our bridge and you kind of crouch down at one end and you look along the blade, you'll see that they're also twisted. There's a twist on the blades as well. And the twist is there also for aerodynamic reasons. So you imagine this twisty, curved shape, no straight lines to be found anywhere on the outside. It does make it challenging, but not impossible. And one of the design features of turbine blades is that inside the blade, the main structural element of the blade is what we call a spar box. And this is looks a bit more like what you would expect to find in a beam in a building. Now, it's not exactly the same, but it behaves in many respects in a similar way. So that's the basis for using these blades in structures that, yes, even though they look very, very complicated, they do have similar properties in some ways to conventional structural elements.
And Vesna, I remember a while ago I was just reading an article about this, and it was a children's playground in Rotterdam called Wicado, and it's made from 5 discarded wind turbine blades. But when you look at the photo first and you don't know anything about wind turbines, you sort of cock your head and you think, God, that looks really familiar. And then you suddenly realise, yeah, that this is the wind turbine waste being recycled and repurposed into something else. I mean, children's playgrounds, is that a potential? It's always a need for them.
Yeah, that is a fabulous, actually, example. And I remember seeing that picture myself, and it became very iconic, to be honest, in a repurposing world of the wind turbines. Now, just to add to what Paul said, and links to the children playgrounds as well, yes, it's challenging. I think engineers are born to deal with the challenges. So we actually like that. But one of the features when we use the materials such as blades are actually this wow effect that they have when you have the finished product. People just cannot believe what is that material. I remember in the trade show, conference in Dublin earlier this year, there was EHOB. It's an electric shelter dock station for the electrical bicycles that was basically funded by ESB. People couldn't actually believe what is that made of. They came to touch the material. They were inquiring, what is that material? Until our industry partner, Bladebridge, actually had to put a plank on the product and say, this product is made from recycled blade. So it is something that is unbelievable. On the same note, and going back to this children playground, we actually had with the first year students in MTU design thinking competition, or let's say a module where they developed and came up with their own ideas what kind of features in the playground they can make out of blades. And they came up with completely different concepts that you can actually see on the children playground from that article that you were talking about. So there is a lot of possibilities. Yes, geometry is challenging, but I think the strength that these blades have gives us a lot of potential to be used in different kind of application. Heavy loaded as bridges, but also as architectural features.
Paul, I suppose the question, and it's for, I suppose, all aspects of green energy waste, why can't, from now on, the wind turbine industry find a different material to make the blades out of? A material that is recyclable and that can actually be reused in a way that doesn't have all these sort of restrictions and confinements?
In the last few years, the wind energy industry has turned its attention very much to recyclable blades. There's been a lot of work done on changing the type of plastic resin that Vesna mentioned, and looking at different types of resins that can be more easily recovered in, you know, chemical process at the end of life of the blades. So there has been a lot of work done on this, and there's a big push. Two of the big manufacturers have developed recyclable blades. But even if all blades became recyclable, and you know, we should also point out, we know from other products that even with good intentions, recyclable doesn't necessarily translate into recycled. And you know, there are lots of examples of products that are ostensibly recyclable, but they don't end up being recycled for many reasons. And actually, one particular issue that we have in Ireland is that we're geographically isolated market for many things. Scale is often an issue for some of these processes. They don't work if they don't have sufficient volume of materials to feed them. You know, we can't be sure even now that a recyclable blade will end up being recycled. And in any case, you know, we've got 20, 30 years worth of the conventional material blades, which are still going to come out of service regardless of what happens in new innovations in new blade materials in the meantime. So there are going to be lots of blades that need to be repurposed. We hope they will be repurposed because we believe it's the best option for them. So even though the wind energy industry is now developing and marketing new recyclable blades, there's still a lot of work to do on, you know, sustainable treatments for conventional blades.
Right, so there's going to be an awful lot of legacy there that needs to be dealt with. I mean, is it possible to make their lifespan longer? You know, can you make these wind turbines of the future, can you make them last, I don't know, a lot longer than 30 years?
They are lasting longer. We've seen so the earlier designs, and this is due to just, you know, technical progress and innovation, but you know, more for the most part now, we can expect, you know, at least 25 years out of wind turbines. It often isn't really the blades that are the decisive factor when it comes to decommissioning a wind farm project. You know, there are many reasons, and some of them have nothing to do with the technology. They may be to do with planning permission. So if the planning permission for a project is time limited, and most of them are, so then the wind farm has to be taken down, or you apply for a new planning permission to extend the lifetime of a wind farm. I think we will see wind farms operating longer. And in fact, some of our own predictions for the volumes of decommissioned blades have turned out to be overestimates. And the reason for this is that the turbines are being kept in operation longer by their operators. So obviously, we want to have some blades to experiment with and to develop new products with. So we're keen to get some blades, but you know, we recognize this is a great outcome. You know, if you keep them from the perspective of the circular economy, if you can keep them in operation for longer, it's a win.
Vesna, I wonder, I mean, I know everyone at the moment is thinking the answer is in artificial intelligence, but is there a role for artificial intelligence in improving the blade repurposing processes, and what are the options basically? So beyond, you know, using them in playgrounds or using them in greenways for bridges or, I don't know, cycle facilities, does artificial intelligence offer anything in that regard?
In the sense of, for me, from the perspective of that we don't actually know the material characteristic or strength or geometry of these blades that were produced 25 years ago or 30 years ago, as Paul said. For example, artificial intelligence would actually help us maybe better characterizing these blades and in longer term enable making easier repurposing in whichever product we can shape those blades. But it will also give the opportunity to give the insights of the blades for the future possible technologies that will be developed that down the line we could be able to actually the recycle. So artificial intelligence can be used in the sense of downscaling the products that we already repurpose. So for example, if we build the bridge of the blades that spans for 50 years, after 50 years serving as a bridge and finishing its life expectancy, we can then have the shape of those blades, have the material characteristic of those blades, and then use them for products such as desks or chairs or the benches and so on. So in that sense, I see that we can use, you know, artificial intelligence. The second part of it could be actually after decommissioning, using artificial intelligence in recognizing the damages of the blades. So maybe pre-selection of the blades, which can be reused in the wind farms, and therefore best outcome we can get, or maybe pre-selecting for repurposing, or these blades are suitable more for recycling and using a low hierarchy approaches. So maybe artificial intelligence should be there to actually merge all the data that we have in the sense of how many wind farms we have, forecasting when the wind farms will be decommissioned, pre-selection of the blades in the sense where they will finish and go next.
Artificial intelligence needs data, and up to now, the issue has been a lack of data. Besson and I are working on a project called Airblade, which is funded through the SFI National Challenge Program. And in Airblade, what we're doing is that we're building a national inventory, a digital inventory of decommissioned wind turbine blades. So we're doing the work of scanning, 3D scanning them with LiDAR, where we're capturing their geometry. Also then capturing data from structural tests in the laboratory in MTU. And what we're doing is that we're building up profiles of the different types of blades that are installed around the country. And then when a similar blade, the same model, comes out of service, we have a kind of a baseline that we know what the properties of this type of blade are. And then we can very quickly match it up to potential applications. And also we can kind of streamline the blade testing process so that we can turn them around faster and match them up to potential new applications. So there will be a role for artificial intelligence there, and we will have the data in our database to kind of train and feed the artificial intelligence models.
Paul, what lessons do you think can be learned, if any, for the green energy industry about this? I mean, you mentioned earlier that maybe 30 years ago, they didn't really think about the fact that there was going to be, you know, blade graveyards. But in the future, I mean, so much green energy is being developed. The minimum, surely, is that it's made all from recyclable material that doesn't end up as plastic pollution in the ocean or whatever.
The two big paradigms, I suppose, in the industry now are design for recycling. So that's where you, at the design stage of a product, it's designed with recycling explicitly being considered, rather than this, you know, putting it on the long finger and, you know, we've got 20, 25 years to come up with some kind of technology that will, you know, hopefully handle this material. And, you know, there are other complex green energy products now that are in use, very complex, lots of different materials, highly engineered, but very difficult to disaggregate. Solar PV panels, have some challenges, and certainly, you know, lithium-ion batteries, we're, you know, going to see have similar challenges with those. And the second paradigm is trying to think about circular value chains. So in the past, we've kind of had very linear value chains where you kind of add value when you're manufacturing something, you're kind of, you know, integrating parts and materials, and you're every time you sort of add something in, the value goes up. But of course, at the end of the life of the product, it has to be eventually, even if it gets repurposed or sold on the secondhand market, I mean, eventually all products become obsolete and need to be, you know, dismantled. So having a circular value chain where instead of it's just sort of all those parts get disaggregated and then just all kind of disposed of, that it's thought about as kind of a loop where the different components get fed back, and they just get kind of feedback into a process that can allow those materials to be recovered. And then maybe, you know, for example, some of the new recyclable blades, the resin can actually just be reused in new blades, which is, you know, a great outcome.
Thanks to Paul Leahy and Vesna Yaksik. For more, go to rte.ie/brainstorm, and you can find Brainstorm in all the usual social places. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode, and subscribe to Brainstorm wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Ella McSweeney. Until next time.
Brainstorm is produced by Adrian Carty. Research was by Hazel O'Leary and recorded by Shane Dempsey at Collaborative Studios. For RTE Brainstorm, thanks to Jim Carroll, Aoife Ryan Christensen and Neil Leighton. The RTE Brainstorm podcast is proudly supported by Research Ireland.